How do we work with willful clients who resist treatment? Now, this is a different side to resistance, a side that deals more with a client who is being disruptive or resistant to therapy. According to Dr. Marsha Linehan, this kind of resistance presents some very real challenges. Here, Marsha shares some practical strategies that can shift a client from willful to willing.
Well, we just finished a study of DBT with adolescents. So my current thinking is that you can always find a resistant group when you work with adolescents. So I look at resistance as the equivalent of willfulness. And I've certainly had a bunch of adult clients be willful also. And almost every teenager has some streak of willfulness somewhere. So that's why we have an entire skill called willingness, which we try to teach. And we have another skill called effectiveness, which we also try to teach. And effectiveness is much easier to teach than willingness, I have to admit, because everybody wants to be effective, but not everybody wants to be willing. So the first thing I would say with willfulness is that you have to notice it. And generally, my experience with willfulness is that any attempt you have to be more willful than the willful person, you will lose. In other words, the harder you try to make them do what you want them to do, the worse things are. And so the first thing to do is to somewhat recognize that you got a willful person in front of you. Okay. And so I've had people come in, for example, to skills training in particular and be completely willful, not willing to do a thing. And I say, okay, so you're being willful today, I can see. All right, how long are you planning on being willful, by the way? I mean, do you think you'll be willful for a little while, or are you thinking you're going to be willful for a long time? I said, what do you think? And they'll usually, you know, might not say anything. I said, well, I figure I'm going to wait around until you stop being willful. But then I talk to them as if they're not very willful. So I don't yell at them, scream at them, tell them to cut it out or anything else. But what I tend to do is simply recognize it. Say, all right, so I'm hoping your willfulness goes down. I'm willing to wait on that. And then I keep talking to them as if they want to talk to me, even though they may not. So that's one type of problem. With the teenagers, I usually tell the teenagers, I say, listen, this is your best quality, being willful. Because you're going to have to fight things in your life. All of us do as we grow up. There are going to be things you're going to have to fight for. And I can see you're not a person who's ever going to give up. And this is a very good quality year. So it's kind of like turning the whole thing around. So that instead of criticizing it for being willful, you start talking about the advantages of being willful, which makes it easier for them to stop being so willful all the time. Okay, because often being willful is to try to keep you from making them do something. And so you're kind of doing the opposite of what they're expecting you to do. So I generally, particularly with willfulness, generally say, you know, how long you think you're going to be this way. Now, if the willfulness, on the other hand, is the person who's resisting therapy itself. Now, with the teenagers, I just say, okay, you're here anyway. Your parents are making you come. So being willful is probably just taking up your time. So I might talk about that. But I've had a number of clients who also don't want to engage in parts of the treatment. You know, I don't want to do this, I don't want to do that, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So the first thing you have to do is be sure that they want the therapy that you have to offer. So I've certainly had clients who refuse to do half of what I wanted them to do. And I usually say, you know, listen, you need to be clear whether I'm the right therapist for you, if you really don't want to do this or unwilling to do this, okay? Now, generally, you have to do that in such a way that it doesn't come across like you're trying to kick them out of therapy, which is very easy to do because you or yourself often start wanting them to get out of therapy because they're so difficult. So you've got to be sure you don't come across that way. You've got to be because they'll say to you and say, well, you're trying to kick me out. Which when you say, no, I just want to be sure you've got a therapy. It's the therapy you really want. Now, so that's one thing you can do. The other thing that you can do If you've taught the skill of willingness, you can actually talk about it. In other words, you can say, well, how are you willing to practice the skill of willfulness? I mean, willingness. Now, I have to admit, a lot of clients may say no, which point you say, okay, there's nothing I can do about it. But the next two things that you can do with a client who is very resistant is go to having a conversation about what's really effective. Now, in DBT, the first thing you can do once a person does that is you can go to wise mind, because you've always taught all your clients the concept of wise mind. And wise mind is go within yourself and ask, is this really effective? And effectiveness is another skill that we teach. And what the average client wants to be effective. In other words, they're not usually going to be against that particular point of view that you've got. But what you've got to do is get them to pay attention to whether they're being effective or not for their own lives. Okay. So you can do that, which often is very effective. Or you can wait them out. Now, I've had maybe in my whole career three people who I said, if you don't want to do this, you are in the wrong therapy. And I've had people go to a different, I've talked to people about how I am the wrong therapist for them. But that's generally when a person really is unwilling to do the therapy itself, okay? As opposed to a person's willfulness in their everyday life. And in their everyday life, what you're going to really be focusing on is wise mind and effectiveness. Is this really effective? And then you have to get a person to do another skill called pros and cons, which is, let's look at the pros and cons of continuing to fight this particular battle. Your other strategy is to try to figure out, are you really afraid of something? Are you avoiding this for some reason? What do you think is going on? And to do more of a clinical assessment of what the controlling variable is. In other words, what is it that's pushing them to avoid doing things? And sometimes they're afraid. I've had many clients who are unwilling to experience the emotion of shame, of sadness. And they say it's too painful and they're not going to do it. Okay. The problem is that if you have a lot of sadness and grief in your life and you refuse to experience it, you can't go forward. With a person like that, you really have to more explain the value of giving up your resistance and why it's so necessary. So you've got to have a good line on. You're functioning now as a salesperson, and you're trying to sell a new behavior to the client. And to sell behavior, you've got to have a rationale for why in the world it would be effective and why it's going to help them. And then your job, it's like selling cars, except you're selling behavior. And I look largely at my job as a therapist is I'm really a behavioral salesperson. And therefore, you have to have a good, story of why it would work. You can give experiences of yourself, of how it worked with you, or how it's worked with other people that you've worked with, why this would be effective for them. And then try to get them to just try a little bit at a time. So that's often the problem, is that what you're asking of the client is painful or difficult. And unfortunately, if they're in therapy with me, at least, they have lives where they have an enormous amount of pain and difficulty. But the only way out is to go through the painful things. So I tell stories about, that they're like a person in hell. And I tell them, I say, in hell, it's really hot down there. So you feel hot all the time. And the only way to get out of hell is to climb up a ladder. But the problem with the ladder is that the ladder's also hot. And so what happens to you constantly is as you're climbing the ladder, it hurts so bad you drop off. And you go back to hell again. And I said, if you could be relaxed in hell, I'd say, fine. I think it's a good idea. Just go on back and stay down in hell. I said, the problem is it's really hot in hell also. So the only way out of hell is to climb up the damn ladder. And the fact that it's painful is true, but there's no other way out. So that's what you've got to do. And I'm up here to help you do it. So, you know, you have to have stories like that and different kinds of stories that mainly because most people need to be sure that you understand their excruciating pain and how difficult everything is. And the minute you start acting like things are easy to do, you've lost.
As Marcia noted, if a client doesn't feel that we've tuned into their struggle, they can feel justified in their resistance, and rightly so. Dr. Peter Levine has also worked with willful populations, and he develops some additional ways to bring down the resistance while helping the client participate in therapy. Here's Peter.
I look at resistance as a welcome, because if they're resisting, that means they've got skin in the game. They're coming out of a passive role. They're doing something to engage the therapist. So I support that. I honor that. I remember once, there's a man named Milton Traeger. And I had the opportunity to spend a week staying with them in Honolulu, he and his wife. And the conversation came around to resistance. And he said, you know, Peter, if I bump into somebody's resistance, I say, excuse me. So if you bump into somebody's resistance, I would say more than excuse me, I would say, look, let's see what's going on here. Let's see where that energy is. And instead of turning the energy against oneself, which is what happens in resistance, let's move the energy outwards. So I think that's is one way I work with it. But sometimes the resistance comes out in a hostility, and which again is a more active form. I think for an example, a long time ago, I would be working with some young people that were, you know, sent by the courts because they were in some kind of juvenile detention, and they would come in completely resistant, hostile. And I know a lot of times therapists say it's very difficult to work with adolescents. And I disagree, because adolescents, again, bring in an energy. They bring in a vitality and aliveness. So these kids would come in and they didn't want to be here. You know, they were going for one reason, because they didn't want to go into juvie. They didn't want to have to go into detention. So I would sign off for, you know, a few sessions. And so, but I remember I would say something like, you know, you have absolutely no reason to trust me, because obviously trust is a big issue with these kids. And you really don't even have any idea whether I can help you. Because I know you're suffering. You're in trouble here. I know things are going on. You know, I know what's going on a little bit in your family, because it's on the, you know, it's on the record here. And the question is, are you willing to give it a try? So I'm respecting the resistance. I'm meeting the resistance. By saying that you have no reason to trust me, I'm giving validation to the resistance, and then say, okay, given all of that, are you willing to give it a try? You know, there was another example. I remember this was in the 70s when I started working with people coming back from Vietnam. And to make a long story a little shorter, I set up a day on a Thursday where anybody could come and I would work with them pro bono. And the first Thursday, one person came. And he came in And he just immediately started describing some of the horrific things that he was made, that he did, that he was maybe made to do. I mean, I never mention them because they're just too horrific. And as he tells me that, I feel myself getting lightheaded, nauseous. I feel almost like I could faint. And so I use this projective identification, or somatic resonance is more what I call it, countertransference or somatic resonance. And I said something like, you know, Bill, when you told me what you just told me, and I described my sensations, and I said, and it wasn't because I was judging you. I know enough about war to know that really bad things happen. But when I felt those sensations, as horrible as they were, I was able to let them move through because I know how to do that. I've developed the skill for that. And I imagine that might be helpful for you. Next Thursday, there was a line around Cedar Street, Milvia Street, Bonita Street, and you know, everybody from their rap group had come in, and we just did a group where I started to teach them some of these tools, and again, so they could move out of the shutdown and the shame, which had so betrayed them and immobilized them in getting back into life.
As Peter mentioned, a client's resistance can sometimes be their way of saying, I'm engaged. And we can use that energy to find new opportunities to bring in the therapeutic work. In the next module, we'll look at how to work with a client's ambivalence toward change.